Welcome back, Combined Belief Podcast, a podcast focused on beating the hell out of your negative voice. Norris Odiase is the host, fine young brother from Dallas, Texas, by way of Nigeria, because I'm Nigerian. If this is your first time listening to the podcast, thank you. Hi, stay tuned because we're focused on beating the hell out of your negative voice and also life, pure vibes. I think life is a holistic kind of thing, but that's besides the point. This week's episode, I'm extremely passionate, obviously, and happy and excited for this episode for the individual I have on, because the individual that I have on has been able to build a platform for not only the marginalized, unheralded stories of the game, but for the young hooper, the young fan that wants to see who they could be in a different way. I'm so passionate about this because I think this individual, I know this individual is about all the right things. So on this podcast, we have the co-founder, COO of Swiss Cultures, a media company focused on showcasing the story of basketball across the world, Miss Ashton Gooden Smith. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Those that just hear what I just said and know you or don't know you, they'll just see the headline and see what you've been able to accomplish. But for stories like yourself and for any story, I think the formative years play a huge role in who you've went on to become. So as you look back on your life and you sort of connect the dots that led you to this moment and who you are and what you're doing, what were the first dots like?
The first dots, I would say, was like I was put in a really different situation just due to the fact I am a type 1 diabetic. Like I got diagnosed really early, around 7 years old. So I would say like going through that and like playing sports and then the whole dynamic changing within my family due to because I have an illness now, I think that kind of put a lot of things into perspective for both me and my family. So I think those early dots like really pretty much paved the way to where I am personally in my life today. So it was a tough early on, not in no like really traumatic way, but just due to the fact that I had an illness and had to adjust to everything that came with it. That kind of, I want to say, planned out my life.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. I think it's powerful to know what you've been able to do despite that. But if you were to unpack that and take me back there, that day that you found out you have diabetes or you're get that diagnosis in your family, can you remember that day and what that was like?
Yeah, no, I was lit. I liked the doctor. I was the weirdest kid ever. Like, I thought I was on the early track to pre-med, you know what I mean? We were in the doctor's office. But the reason I was there was because I was getting like really skinny and I was drinking a lot of fluids consistently, like 1 liter, 2 liter bottles all by myself, soda. And then like always using the restroom, like always having to like flush my system out. So my parents really, you know, saw the signs, but they didn't know what it was. Once they saw I was skinny, they're like, okay, we gotta go immediately. So I went to the doctor and I see my pediatrician and he's hella funny. So like, he's making jokes like, there's nothing wrong with this girl. Like, why y'all here? Like just playing around, but he's great at what he does. And then he ran a couple of tests and while we were waiting, everything was fine. Then he came in and his whole face was different, like not joking, like just 100% serious. And I think he was talking to my mom and I can see my mom's facial expression change. And I didn't know what was going on. And then right off the gates, had to learn how to take shots, you know, with the needles, insulin, had to do like, they gave me a little coloring book to explain like what was happening with me. And from that point on, like I had it for the rest of my life. And it was an adjustment for me in the beginning because I thought it was temporary. Cause it's like, I thought I liked being a doctor. So I was like, oh, okay, cool. Like I'm practicing on this little teddy bear, how to give shots. Like I'm really in school. Like, I really do this. And then after like a week, I was like, you know what? This is what, like, what's going on? And yeah, it just, you know, it made sense to me after a certain amount of time. Like, this is something that is a part of me. But with that being said, it gradually developed into where I transitioned from the individual shots to my insulin pump. Now I have this Dexcom that's a continuous glucose monitor. So now I don't have to prick my fingers as much. So there's a lot of progression in where it is today that helps me mentally and physically do stuff that I'd love to do on the daily. So, but the beginning was tough. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah. It's really hard.
But we're here.
We're here. Thank you. I mean, for taking me there and showing me how you felt and still have this jovial mood that you do laughing. And because if you're a kid and you're seeing all that, him coming in, him joking with you, and then everything switches, it's almost like you had to switch as well. And from the mindset or the vitality, the energy that you have as a kid growing in, and you're saying, oh, I get to do this pre-med stuff, to, okay, this is actually my real life. If it was me and just speaking at length here, I'm just like, that causes you to grow up fast and have responsibility fast.
Yeah.
So what do you think that costs you in that time?
I would say like how you said, I had to be very mature at a young age, I felt like. So I always, even to this day, I'd be like, dang, I feel like I've never gotten a chance to really like do whatever I wanted, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Even right now, because I always had to think in a mature mindset. So it was like, dang, while I was 7, I had to think about carb counts, blood sugars, all this. And my friends are just chilling, like they get to do whatever. And I think that kind of, you know, made me a little bit sad. But, you know, I'm blessed to have the family that I do have, because they always made me feel normal. And they always was like, you are normal regardless of like what people say. So they put me in a really good position to be strong in that regard. But it was tough, because like sometimes, like especially when I was younger, I didn't really want to show like I took shots and all that. I was a little bit insecure, and my mom was like,
what age, like when were you, if you were to think of an experience? Because I'm thinking you have to momentarily, there's moments in your day you probably have a stopwatch to when you have to do certain things. Like, if you were to take me through that time, like when would you kind of guard what you were doing just to fit in or just to be seen as quote unquote normal?
Yeah, I would say, because it's there's like different stages of your life. So when I was little, when I first got diagnosed, it was kind of like every time of the day, because since I was so new to it, they had to monitor me like clockwork, because I think I was the first diabetic at my school, in my elementary school. So they had to put like a new protocol, like all this stuff. So it was constant monitoring. So I was like, dang, it sucks. Like, I don't want people to show like see blood, you know, or whatever. And then when I go into middle school, everybody is like eating whatever they want. And obviously, I want to eat whatever I want too. So sometimes I would just eat it and not even give myself insulin for it. And then, but that was obviously bad. So I would go to my mom's classroom, because my mom was a teacher there, and do my blood sugar testing and all that stuff. So that was super helpful. I would do it behind her desk. A situation that happened once I started playing sports was, I had my insulin pump at this time. And, you know, when you're playing like volleyball, basketball, whatever sport you are, you're not supposed to have anything on you, no jewelry, whatever. So I had my pump on, and the ref like told me to take it off, not realizing like what it was. And so we had to stop the game. I had to explain to her like what it is. And then I was like, okay, so I can avoid doing that. I'm gonna just tell the refs beforehand, like, this is my insulin pump, so we don't have to go through, you know, the whole tobacco about what's happening. And then I think, you know, there's, I can go down a rabbit hole with all the different experiences, you know, people saying that I'm taking steroids because I'm taking shots. And I'm just like, you can't be serious. So
yeah,
it's like different stages of my life. I had to go through different periods of like feeling insecure and having to beat that insecurity consistently. Now I'm more outward with it. And honestly, I forget I have this on because it's on the back of my arm, so I don't really see it. With my insulin pump, I feel it a lot, so I try to like maneuver it a little bit, but just a constant battle, I would say.
Man, honestly, thank you for sharing that. No, that's the thing. That's the thing. The man is not the feeling sorry. I was going to go the other way. The ability to, one, articulate everything you went through and to show, okay, they had to stop the whole game for me to explain to this dumbass rep that, hey, and basically in a kid at that time, it could be humiliating and you're going through all that and you're still like, nah, I'm going to get it. It's okay. I'm going to work. I'm like, where does that come from? Because a lot of kids, a lot of people don't have that belief. They don't come up in the background to instill those values of keep going, that go. I'm curious to know your environment, your family structure, like where does that, this mindset even come from? Because if I was diagnosed with something, or if somebody is, they would almost like slow tail into the things that they do, not just jump into sports and then do this and then do this. Like, where does that drive come from?
Family, I would say. And I think it's the most cliche thing, but it's the truth. My family is really like my core. So anything that I had issues with, it's like, especially when I was younger, they kind of gave me that push of like strength. Because when you're young, you don't even know what strength is. You don't know what, like, you don't know anything. Yeah. Like I used to be chilling, watching SpongeBob and Powerpuff Girls. Like that was my only priority when I was little. And then I got diagnosed and then that's when stuff kind of changed and I had to be a little more mature, but like, it just stemmed from a young age, I guess, of just instilling core values into me and my brother. So.
What did that look like, though? Because everybody says that. And I can say that. But from my Nigerian household, my mom, my dad was on my ass. And in the household, I'm Nigerian. I know the beliefs and the values of that home. My dad's a PK. And then when I go to school, the niggas, they saying this and they saying that. And I'm conflicted. I'm a twin as well. So I have the beliefs and the values of my household. But then when I go to school, I'm trying to be one of them. Like, how... And what was your role in your household? I know you're a younger sibling. Like, what does that look like? Like, who were you? Because I was the kind of mischievous one growing up.
I was really like, honestly, I want to say I was quiet when I was growing up and very observant. And but that changed. Now I talk too much and and I'd be like that sometimes. So. But when I was little, I want to say it only took me a handful of times to get in trouble and to get a little pop. Like, I was like, nah, I'm good.
Can you remember one of those times?
Do I remember?
Because right now we know the warrior, like she going, she's doing this, she's doing this. But what about the little badass Ashton? Like, what was she like?
How did she get right? You know, like I remember I stormed upstairs one time and because I was mad, I guess something crazy. But the only reason I stormed upstairs is because I saw it on Disney Channel. And one of these little girls was doing and one of these little girls was doing it and she got away with it. So I was like, I'm going to do this right now in this moment. What? That was the worst thing I could have ever done. And I still remember it was in our house, like right over here in the up the stairs. And my mom said, if you don't come downstairs, what? I can't even go to the details, but I definitely remember that.
No, I think it's funny because in those times in adolescence, I always say there are real impressionable ages from age 8 to 18 where we're searching for who we are. We're searching for truth, whether it's the evidence of, okay, I can play this basketball for me. Oh, that's good. Y'all like it. They think I'm cool at school. I'm gonna run with that. Or with whatever you want to do in life, you see how people are responding to your actions and you're like, okay, that's bad. I shouldn't storm up the stairs, storm down the stairs, like on the channel, or okay, I should run with that in my life. And your story, taking it back to that place, who did Ashton believe that she was? And what did she think that she was able to do because of the way that she thought of who she was?
It's weird because I felt like I was I was just nice to everybody. Like, I really liked being a person that like brought everybody together. And that was something that I loved to do, was just, I was cool with everyone. And I think honestly, that was in every stage. Like when elementary school, middle school, high school, college to now, I don't care who you are. Like if you're cool and nice, I rock with you. But if you're mean or like kind of iffy, yeah, I'm a kind of stay my distance, but it's been pretty consistent since I was little.
You ever ask yourself why, though? Because you could be a good person, but not really want to talk to people. Like, all right, I'm going to be me. You're going to be you. Like, have you ever asked yourself, why do I actually care about people and having conversations with people that much? Like, through all that I've been through in my life, I can care about me and mine, but why do I don't know. Because something I'm curious of too is I'm a curious person. I care about people. I love conversations. That's why I have a podcast. But I'm like, bro, why?
Yeah. Well, it's because of my diagnosis for sure. Like I didn't want anybody to feel like an outcast. So I always make people feel included. So that's 100% why I think that little seed was planted.
In the form that you said, to make people feel safe. And I always look at the opposite of what people say, like, okay, is there a time that you felt unsafe? And then it sounds like you felt safe with your family, but the word safe, why was that important for you to include that? Like, why safety? Like, why is it making people feel safe? Why is that important?
Because when you are considered different, you're going to get kind of like ostracized or put in a category where you're not necessarily like invited to a bunch of spots, or like, I don't know, like kind of just segmented a little bit out of groups and stuff like that. So I definitely felt that occasionally where people didn't want me to come to places because they know like I had to do this, that, and the third to make sure my health was okay. And it was a lot like that I had to do. It wasn't my fault because I had to do it. I had to live and still doing it. But during that time, there wasn't the technology that there was today. So it was like a lot of different things I had to do and a lot of precautions that came with it. So yeah, I felt very kind of outcasted in those cases. And I know how I felt personally. So I made sure that at least if you are rocking with me, I will never make anybody feel that way. So yeah. I think that's why I kind of make sure that whoever interacts with me has a good experience as best as I can. So, and the way we're raised too, like my family is very like welcoming, and like after a couple days or a couple months, like if we notice that these people are consistently around us, you're pretty much family.
Facts.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. That's love. During that time though, you also, you search for evidence. I picked up a basketball for you. You picked up the game of volleyball. When you think about that, what did volleyball give you?
It gave me perspective and to be tough, but like, I always go down this. Yeah, like I always go back and forth. Everybody that meets me, they'd be like, did you have a great volleyball experience? I'd be like, absolutely not. Like, I did not, for me, like on the outside, it looked good, I would say, but I didn't like it. So I started volleyball in middle school around like 12, 13. I was bad. I was tall though, but very bad. My mom was like, you gotta prove to the fam, basically, like, if we're gonna invest in you, like, you at least gotta do something. Like, the looks of it, like, the projections of this investment, we're gonna be in the hole. Like, we're not gonna make it off the hood. Like, so, I just really worked at it because I liked the idea of volleyball. It was cute, especially if you're taller. And it was different, like, you know, especially in Black families, like, we usually gravitate towards basketball, track and field, and football. So I knew I didn't like basketball. I didn't like basketball in the fact that I had to be up under people and physical contact. I wasn't really rocking with it. And then football, yeah, that was out. So I was like, dang, track, nah, couldn't do it no more. And then I was like, volleyball is cool. So long story short, I proved that, you know, to invest in me. Went to high school, still wasn't good, but I made the team because I was tall. Then learned how to really hit the ball straight down my freshman year. Sophomore year comes, I'm getting offers by clubs to go play for them. End of sophomore year, I commit to Berkeley. Mm. And yeah, because I developed so quick. And it was just so much pressure that came with volleyball. And then I went to college. My coaches were not it for me. And that's I know we're going to dive probably deeper into that. So,
yeah, but now the pressure that you speak on kind of, hey, bro, you got to figure it out, this volleyball thing. And knowing that what you're going through in your life, you're like, all right, I'm going to keep defying the odds. You get on a club team, you get the offer from Berkeley. You go to Berkeley. When you speak now in hindsight on your story, you're like, bro, that was too much for me to have to deal with. But I don't know. I'm thinking out loud, but there is something that, I don't know, that you learn about yourself. I know that the pressure from the outside, you're kind of dealing with it. But now you can almost look at your story and be like, dang, I didn't know that about myself. Like, I was going through with the diagnosis, but then the added struggle of having to be good at volleyball or else, who knows? Like, I don't know. What did you learn about you even in college? Let's fast forward to college. Like, what did you learn about you during that pain and those times? Like, if you were to walk me through a trying time at Berkeley where the coaches are on your ass for no reason, what did you really take from that experience?
I took away a lot of stuff. I took away some trauma for sure. But I would say,
trauma from what?
Just due to everything that kind of came with it. So not playing, and then the expectations that are placed upon you once you come in as a freshman, because I was like top five. So like, that was a lot. And my family was the only one that knew that I didn't want to play after college. So I was kind of using this as a catalyst to get my degree for sure. But I wanted it to be a good experience, but it really wasn't. Even how it was set up going into Cal, it was like a bunch of stuff that was with it.
Wait, what? Why didn't your coaches, like, why didn't you tell your coaches, like, all right, I'm not trying to do this as a thing. Like, Cal Berkeley is an academic school. Like, I'm also good, you know, on the court too, but hello.
Well, because Cal was, like, really good at volleyball at one time. So, like, for our program, it was pretty solid. You know what I mean? And good academically. So it's kind of like how football was pretty good at Cal when you had like Aaron Rodgers, Marshawn Lynch, like volleyball was pretty up there. So essentially I was there to help. Like, I don't know if it was a little bit on the decline at that time, but I know they weren't at the top. And I think when I was brought in, they kind of expected to like go back to the top of like Final Four, like all this different stuff. So it was just a lot of pressures, and I knew for a fact that I didn't one. I just didn't feel comfortable even talking to my coaches. Like, I never felt like I had a coach where I really could connect with, especially not a head coach. So
why did you keep playing all 4 years? Like, what made you, okay, you're playing this game, you're doing it to get to this level, obviously to get an education. You don't see yourself outside of it. You're not supported in the environment that you're in. Why did you keep going?
At first, the last time I got injured, like, because I got injured 3 times, all meniscus.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my and God. Yeah.
It was tough because, like, everybody's like, oh, that's a fast recovery. But as a diabetic, our bodies recover a little bit slower. It's like a whole mess. So during one of, I forgot which injury it was, if it was the second or third, I think it's this. I forgot, but my coach was basically trying to convince me to medically redshirt. And I don't even think the medically redshirting me was for me, but more for him to open up a roster spot. So I didn't peep it. The way that it went down was insane too. It was like after a game and you know, the injury, like if you're injured, you still go to the game, but you're just like off to the side. They call me to talk to a doctor. This is like at 9 p.m. Talk to the doctor. My trainer was there. And they show me like an MRI of my leg. And then there's like saying basically if I continue to play that I'm not going to be able to walk again. And it was a setup because they were trying to get me to medically redshirt. And I told my mom that. And she was like, forget that. We're going to go to a doctor out here for your next surgeries and figure it out. Do rehab down here. Then when you go back up, you could do rehab up there. But it was just so done bad how it was handled. Like, I was crying after they showed it to me. It was just mentally, like, so many mental games played up at Cal that I don't know if it had to. I feel like it was a combination of like race, expectations, environment, like all of it. It was just too much. It was a lot.
This is why I love having these conversations, because you get to learn about someone like you who, fast forward, you go on to build this platform with your brother, and you're showcasing the stories and you're highlighting the stories of not only just the person, the athlete, but the behind the jersey stories as well. And it's always good because it actually comes from a real place. And yeah, you didn't play basketball, but from a volleyball player that goes through all this trauma, not only in her life, but in her athletic life, and having to deal with that. And showcasing and shining a light to those kind of stories is everything. And thank you for sharing that, because man, it's inspiring. I'm not gonna lie, because I see who you are now and I see what you're doing now. So you're like, all right, I'm gonna drop this and I'm gonna come and be COO and partner. And that
that came out of random. Like, it's crazy.
Right.
Yeah.
During that time when you're in Cal with a Jaylen Brown and let's say what your brother calls you and says, hey, let's start this. How did that even go about? And what was the mindset? And yes, I can imagine if it was me, that's a lot of tension within volleyball already. And then transitioning to a life that is unknown. I don't even know what's going to happen from this. What was that time like?
During our time, I don't think colleges did a good job with funneling athletes to either professional basketball or professional sports if you're not going to the league.
Yes.
And preparing you for the workforce. I feel like it's very difficult because you prepare all your life to get to college. You're in college for 4 years and dedicate all that time to play in college. And then you get out and you're just like, dang, I didn't even know what an internship was. Like, you know what I mean? Like the fact that it was just a lot. So I think they might be doing a better job at it where they're helping athletes, you know, start preparing for stuff through internships. But I know for mine, it wasn't really helpful. But yeah, like to kind of go back to your question, because you were asking about like how it was when my brother called and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah. Like yeah, if you were to take me to that day, like, or when he had the idea, did you even jump on immediately? Like, what were, was there hesitation? Like, how did you go about it?
So like, I was still in season when he was talking to me and the fam about the idea. And I was more so like the supportive sister. And I really rocked with the idea of it. But since I was in season, I couldn't do it then yet. But once my season stopped and was over, I picked up the camera and kind of was like emulating what he was doing. But I was still more on the creative side of like, I wanted to see how like I can take photos. Like I did like a lot of photo work. And then I, when it came to videos, like I would kind of like mess around with the videos and stuff like that.
Right.
But it really connected when I graduated and like my brother and my co-founder were in off season and came back to the States and we all linked up. And I think that's when stuff was like, it really hit to where like, well, like we're getting introduced into the NBA space. It's going to be a little different. And it was cool because they're already covering overseas. So we had that kind of under lock already and was growing that. But to have like an additional aspect of it, I'm like, shoot, this is fire. Like, this is really cool. And it was hard because it was a hobby at first. This was not a business. So everything is for free.
Yes. Like,
everything is for free. No one's going to be like, yeah, we're going to pay you to come. Like, there was no one helping us. But they helped us with opportunities. So that kind of over, you know, that blessed us in a way.
But like you say, when it's becoming your actual position and you're literally on the Forbes under 30 list, like when it comes to that point where, okay, we're building a platform to where, oh, this is, we have over 1 million followers on IG, TikTok, on YouTube. Like when it comes to that, what was that like being a part of that? Like the added pressure, like the steps. I know it took years to get to this point, but just seeing this as a transitional period from, okay, I say yes to the idea. Okay, it's not a hobby. It's kind of a hobby. Now it's actually our real lives. Like for you personally, what is that ongoing journey like, and what you face that no one knows? And because I can imagine me doing a podcast right now, this is something I take very seriously. I pour my heart into it, and I know there's a lot that goes behind the scenes. Yes. So it's like, this is a lot. I can imagine that is a lot. Like, what is it like now it being your actual job? Like you transition fully.
That's a really great question. It's a lot. Like, it's a lot every day. Like, we were athletes first. We never even been in the workforce. So that's a whole thing in itself of like, how do you organize stuff? How do you record hours? Like, do I punch in? Like, and media is different because it's not a 9-to-5. It's like a 24/7, especially basketball. Basketball never sleeps. Oh my God. So I think that was a, you know, reality check for us, but I think we're starting to figure it out and it's a continuous process. Like the Apples of the world, the Microsofts, the, you know, Bleacher Report, all that stuff is cool. But they, if you notice and do your due diligence, they have people that work, that have been working since college that probably never played sports. Like they probably were the fan that went to all the games, but they didn't wake up at 6 a.m. to go to double days. Like, so it's just interesting to see how we are now because we still feel like we're in it. There's no type of like, oh, we made, no, there's none of that right now. Cause we're like, we're still in the grind mode and just talking about like followers and stuff. We're like, we got to do better. We have to do better. We're always talking about doing better. So it's a blessing for sure, but we're so focused. I think we don't even get the time to be like, dang, we're here. Cause we see how much more we got to go.
Man, what you just said is huge because it's like, the ambition fuels you, and you're used to having ambition for you in your life, everything you've accomplished and everything that you went through. Like, you're like, okay, next step, next step, next step. And your upbringing, the values that you have is always strive, but it's kind of tough because it's like, okay, you see the numbers and you got to look at the numbers every day, and social media is one thing, and you pour your heart into this interview or this clip and it doesn't do what it should do. Having to be ambitious, but then content, but then also with the vision for more, like that's a real challenge. And I don't know, I'm curious to know, like, for you, where do you spend most of your time? Like, in the future or in the past? Like, okay, this is in the future or in the past, we did this, so we got to be better. We did this in the past, so we got to be better. Like, where do you spend most of your time?
Dang, you really hit me with the 1-2. Oh my God. I would say, oh man, that's tough. I think it's situational, because in order for me to learn about what to do, I have to dig into everybody else's past. So I have to go research. I do a lot of research about, like, how other companies came about, where they started. I listen to, like, a lot of podcasts of founders, just because we have our base blocks, like our building blocks, but it's still, like, we're still trying to piece things together. So we're like, why don't we look at how other people have created theirs? So I spent a lot of time in the past in that regard. But for our own company, not too much in the past, if that makes sense. It's more so like, let's look at current analytics to see what people are rocking with and how we can make it better. So we do more of that. And in regards to future, I look in the future, I would say, like, a little bit more often now, because in order to goal set, I have to figure out what I envision us as our end goal so I could work backwards. So it's like, it's a little bit of like Ghost of Christmas Past, Ghost of Christmas Present,
facts,
Ghost of Christmas Future when it comes
to imagine. I imagine you have a post that, like, goes, let's say a post you pop off right now, 15 million see it. You like, oh, we lit, let's go. And then days after, you're like, all right, what do we do with this? Like, what next? Like,
yeah, because, like, it's different being a media company and reporting than it is to just be kind of like an influencer, because your following as an influencer just cares about what you do and they don't care to see it probably every day. But if you post it every day, that's a bonus for them. But for us, they're literally looking for information, entertainment, stats, culture, etc. So it's like, we can't really miss anything. Like, we got to be kind of locked in at all times.
But how do you go? I have so many questions. How do you go about separating you from Swiss cultures then? Because you're not Swiss culture.
It's tough. It's really hard. I'm trying to figure out how to, like, make myself Ashton as well as Ashton Swish cultures. Like, I'm trying to make sure that I don't lose myself within the company, but more so complement the company with how I am. And it's hard because, like, you're spending so much time, you know, building something, and I can see how, you know, parents get lost in their kids, truthfully. They put in all that effort into their kids. They lose themselves. And then when their kids go to college, they're like, dang, well, hey, like, what do we do now? Like, the empty nester phase, I bet it is insanely hard that people don't talk about. But it's very similar to that.
What are the symptoms that kind of come up when Ashton loses herself? Like, when your knees or your focus is just Swiss culture, what are the symptoms that come up that make you say, all right, I got to chill. Like, I'm Ashton as well. Like, I'm not just this. Like, we built this to help people and showcase the stories. But what about my story as a person? Like, what are the symptoms that come up?
Yeah, I think, you know, it gets triggered, situational, like, especially in conversations. I know back in the day you used to piss me off when people are like, you don't have your camera. And I know this pisses other creators off too, when they're like, you don't have your camera, you're not gonna video, like literally when you're out having and enjoying your time. And you're just like, I am a person. So I just make sure that I do a little bit more like of expressing how I am or my personality, so people can see like I am different as well as very involved. So I think I learned this in college. It's called like intersectionality, where you are a part of, you're not just one thing, you can be multiple. So like back in college, I was an athlete, I was Black, I was a female, and a diabetic. So I was like four things that made me, but those different four things each have its own category that doesn't necessarily always have to intertwine. So I think of that like now, like I'm a co-founder, I'm Black, I'm a woman, I in sports, and X, Y, and Z. So just piecing that together.
I think that's huge. I always say God gives us many talents. Like you're not just Ashton, the volleyball player. You're also Ashton, the daughter, Ashton, the one fighting this diagnosis that I've had, the Ashton that's the voice and the reason for a lot of kids that she doesn't even know yet. There's a lot of people that listen to you and listen to this story to be like, man, I'm actually encouraged by this story, by hearing someone go through what she's been through, defying the odds of three meniscus tears is crazy. Defying the odds of going to a tough program where they don't even actually care about you. They're just trying to, okay, let's get somebody else in, going through all that. And now building a platform with family and with friends that actually cares about the athlete's story. I think just all of that in one is one is admirable, and two, it tells the real tale of who you are as a person. When you think about Swiss cultures and what you're building, and specifically your hand on it, to be this Black woman, Forbes 30, under 30, to be this figure, what are you most proud about in yourself that you've accomplished to this point?
I'm most proud about kind of that I've been consistent in the fact, like, I haven't really changed who I am. Like, people that's met me earlier on, I would hope they would say that I haven't changed or haven't changed much. Like, you know, it's kind of, I see, like, that's making me think now, because I could easily say that I haven't changed, but someone else could say I've changed. But from my perspective, I feel like I've been consistent with how I am as a person in its entirety, especially of how, like, I treat people. So I think that would be my biggest pride right now.
It's funny because you also did say what you would change is being more consistent with yourself.
Okay. And that's why I had to be specific with that. I said consistent with being myself, but on my thing, oh my God, being inconsistent is probably the most consistent thing I do.
In what though?
Like with ideas and stuff like that. If I have a certain idea, like it might last for a couple weeks and then I'll be like, okay. Or I'll just legit forget about it. So that's why I'm like, I need to really like hound myself on doing something, even when I don't want to do it. Cause I think I did that so much in college that once I graduated, I was like, I don't care anymore. I'm not going to do stuff that I don't want to do. And it's a balance. I'm trying to figure that out.
Yeah. No, I think if one was to be awarded a phase of, okay, she could do what she wants to do, it's you, because you've been battling and proving and fighting through all the things that you have in your life. There's moments that you can say, okay, I can chill on that and focus and kind of figure it out in that way. I am curious. I jump a lot of places. I'm ADD. Your actual role with what you do in Swiss cultures, and what is your day-to-day process like? Like if we were behind your eyes, tomorrow morning, what would you be doing? And what would be kind of on your heart that's weighing you down? Because sometimes I'm like, you know, if you're an entrepreneur, you're starting your own business, you have this internal clock in you that it's not nobody telling you, do this, do this. You're like, I got to do this. I got to do this. And then it's media and you're battling with, like you said, the Bleacher Report, all these different companies that have X amount of employees and you're trying to pump out quality to that level. So like, what's that like during your day to day?
Depending on game days, like I'll try to get a lot of my work done earlier in the morning. So I'll like wake up, write emails, especially since 2024 is coming up, really trying to figure out what we're going to do, if we're going to do more collabs with other brands or how to do like how to expand in a way. So definitely do a lot of reach outs and meetings. Then content. I like that's the part that is just so tiring. It's just the content itself. I mean, hey, it comes with the territory, but the content and figure out like what I'm gonna post, what's happening right now. Then I gotta get ready, drive an hour and a half to the facility to crypto. I get there 3 hours before. Film some of the guys pre-game, in-game, do post-game interviews, come home around like 11, get home at 11:45. I try my best to edit before I go to sleep because I know as soon as I knock out, waking up early, like at 6, is going to beat me up. So I try to edit. Right then and there, but and then it just differs because there's always something happening. Like we're flying a plane and fixing it too. And I learned that from, you know, my friend that was helping us just strategize. It's like literally you're flying a plane while and fixing it, and it's really hard.
And learning, like
you and learning how to fly.
You're covering us. And you're covering a sport that you did not play, like that learning curve.
Oh, that was a whole thing in itself. I went through Jordan boot camp, which is my brother. He was, cause he's so smart. Like him and my co-founder, they played perfect at like a high level. So it was so hard for me to figure out what the heck they were talking about. Like, what, like a drag dribble, like what are we doing? Like, yeah. So I had to completely change my mindset of the terminology and then associating the terminology with the actual movement. So but I feel like I've been learning a lot just from repetition, kind of like the athlete mindset is really coming in clutch for me.
I think it's so beautiful because you're someone that's gone through a lot and you're so willing to change. You're not chained to who you were, who they knew you as. You're like, oh, I'll put that down and I'll pick up this and I'll learn. I don't even know it, but I'll learn. And you get to a space where you have accolades and you have stuff to show for it, but you're still wanting more. Always people like you and your story. I'm always curious. Imposter syndrome is something that comes up when you've vaulted real quickly. And people see you. And if I'm you behind your eyes, I'm like, wait, I didn't even know about this sport before. I quickly learned on the fly. We quickly learned probably YouTube University how to do all this. Now we're at this level. Do you have challenges dealing with that? Any of feeling like, I shouldn't be where I'm at or any of that?
We haven't necessarily made it yet. Like we're doing great. We're doing good, like really good stuff, great stuff. You know, improving every day. But I just get imposter syndrome when I get these like accolades and awards associated to me. And because I just know how much more work we have to do. And so like even with Forbes, like when I know, like when I got on the list, I was just like, I thought it was fake. I thought it was like a spam email at 5 a.m. And I was like, what? And I opened it. And I was like, oh shoot. Like I really made it. And like, even that, I was like, I, especially because I'm under 30 and my brother is over 30. So anything, and my other co-founders are over 32, I feel like anything that I get, they should get. Mm-hmm. So, because it's a team effort. So when I get it specifically to me, like, I feel like that type of imposter syndrome because it's 100% a group effort. It's not just me putting in that work. So,
yeah.
But with that, it was just an age thing, I think. So that's why. But yeah, like, of course, I get imposter syndrome. I think you wouldn't be human if you haven't.
Yeah.
You take time, though. Some people that haven't, though. So
that, which I think they're psychotic. But do you take time, though, to really internalize your accomplishments? Like, nah, wait. Like, I understand the athlete mindset. We want more. We want more. We want more. But hey, I just did something. Like, I can, you know, take time and understand what God placed in me. Like, he saw what I've been through. He put, like, all my life I've gone through something and then I switched and now I've accomplished this new thing. Do you take time to realize that and recognize it?
I do sometimes, but I don't really find the joy in it. I find the joy in when, like, you know, I can experience it with everybody. So, like, so being on Forbes is a blessing. Don't get me wrong. It's 100% amazing. But I can't wait to get to a point where, like, we're living really well. We're financially free. And me and my family are on our way to Turks and Caicos to chill. Mm. And we can enjoy those moments together, you know, instead of always grinding. So those are the stuff that I cherish more than awards. But like I said, awards are amazing. I just find more pleasure in experiences with the people that I'm really close with.
Yeah, they're like, the awards are kind of the mark in your journey. It shows, okay, I'm on the right path, but I'm not where I want to be. Where you want to be is financially free, like you said, and you put in the form. If you were to think of an image that pops in your head when you think of the term financial freedom, what is that image for you that pops in your head?
Yeah, like, no debt. Student loans are beating me up. So no debt. And living in a really nice area. I mean, I've always lived in a nice area. Don't get me wrong. I grew up in the suburbs. So don't let me.
Hey, you say your mom was from the streets. I saw it on your YouTube video. You said something like that.
Mom grew up. She grew up in Compton and in Pomona, San Bernardino. So my dad grew up in Pomona. So yeah. I grew up in Rancho. It's completely opposite. Like, I'm very much middle class. Don't let me fool you. Don't let me fool you. I'm a middle class girly. But yeah, just kind of being able to live in a really nice house in a good area somewhere close to LA with the fam. Like, I really would love that and be able to, you know, take care of my family. Both my current family and future family, and just enjoy what life has to offer to the fullest. Mm.
To the fullest. What has to happen for your dreams to be realized with Swish Cultures? Like, what has to happen next for that dream to come true? What has to happen and kind of the next steps?
I would say, like, we're profitable now. We've always been profitable, which has been a blessing for us. But just really more, just I would say, like, in any business, just a really great revenue stream and multiple streams. You know, stuff that you are investing in on the side of passive income where you don't have to work for it all the time. Just like different strategies to where your money is making money for you. So with Swish, I would say just being able to bring in more revenue. And even with that being said, I feel like when we get to a point where we can bring in a lot more revenue, we'll be able to bring in staff that we really rock with. And hopefully, I know a goal of mine is to bring in a lot of athletes that don't necessarily know what they're doing after college, but they know that they could come here and they could use their resources and everything that they learn in college here to be creative and have a job, and not necessarily have to rely on playing overseas, jumping from team to team to just make a paycheck. Like, I feel like that's a lot of mental wear and tear on, especially I feel like a lot on Black men, on men in general that play. So,
oh my God, like, you, that's it. Like, literally, like, I'm so passionate in that. I'm so glad you said that, because it, that's why what you guys are doing and what you've built and the vision that you have is so powerful. And it's encouraging to see somebody actually caring about that and to hear that story and to hear the background and to hear just a little piece of your day. I know you probably didn't touch on everything you do, because it's impossible. It's impossible to talk about every single thing that you do, but just to share a little bit of it on this podcast, I'm grateful to have you. I always ask this question to all of my guests, to leave it out. Overcoming your negative voice, your mind bully, that negative voice that tells you that you can't transition to a life after volleyball, that you can't jump and be in this Forbes under 30. You can't become this and build your company as you guys keep going. That voice that comes after you in your day to day, your mind bully. What are the practical steps that you do personally to take care of yourself and overcome your negative voice?
Man, that's a really good question, because it's a never ending battle, and it's something that you'll forever deal with until you're probably really, really, really old. I would say, like, some tactics would be to set goals. And I know that because it's hard for me right now. I'm a really bad goal setter. Like, I'm more of like a manifester, where I'll be like, and I pray a lot. So I'll be like, I'm manifesting this. Like, I really want to do this and like put that in the universe. But my goals is to write goals and to and to break it down, though, to where it's like a, like, steps to how I can get there, because I'm such a writer type of person. And I think if I write it down and think through it, then I can actually be like, oh, if I want to make $10 tomorrow, I'm going to sell a box. And then I'm going to sell the box at premium, because you have it. And you're a public figure. And so I'm going to have you posted on your Instagram saying, this box is going for $15. So I'm going to get $10, and then I'm going to give you $5 for branding it for me. So, like, I would just, like, try to do a little like that. And I think that that's kind of helpful to overstep any of your negative thoughts, because once you put it into reality, you're like, oh, it's not that hard. Everything that we do is really not that hard. Like, basketball, if you really simplified it again, it's not that hard. But you just got to make sure at every level you adjust and then stick to your basics. So it's like with sports, too. Like, everything is hand in hand. Like, a lot of stuff isn't hard. We make it really difficult. And just simplifying it again, I guess.
Simplifying it. What I got from that is really it's, set a vision for your life. And once you have a vision, it's the discipline that comes after it to set the goals, to stay attached and detailed, locked in with those goals. And as you do that over time, the vision and the discipline, it builds character. And everybody is attracted to people, high character individuals, and you build from that. That's your base. Being someone of high character, no matter what I face, no matter what I go through, I can build from this moment because I've done it all my life, and we built our company off character as well. So I'm appreciative, honestly. This is great just hearing from your story, because I know it helped me in my journey of not only building the podcast and building the platform, but just as a person to know that you can transition after sports or during sports, or you can have a mindset and traits that you want to build out that's not sports related. Like, you could have an eye and a perspective that's not actually dribbling and shooting hoops and be successful and be platformed and showcased. So I'm grateful to have you on the podcast. Thank you.
No, I appreciate you for bringing me on. I think this is dope and a really good concept that you're implementing. And it's some tough questions. I ain't gonna lie. It had me out. Like, even when I filled out the form, I was like, hey.
It's probably too much. But I don't know. Yeah. I like to challenge myself in the way I think. So I like to also, you know, think deeper, because I know that you have a real story and a real place that you get to. I like to think of my podcast sometimes as therapy, because when you hear your own self and your stories, you're like, damn. I went through that. I did that. Oh, damn. Like, I think that's
my
cool.
Media training,
I think,
came in so hefty. Oh, my God. To the point I was like, yo, can I say that? Like, I kept going back and forth.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Mind Bully Podcast. If you like anything that you heard in this episode, rate and review this podcast. It does so much to boost the platform up. So do that, please. And thank you. Till the next time.
Hey, Genix, you going off.